sword, like he had himself, advanced from iron rank to bronze. He was now laying out ingots of blood gold and starfall silver, piles of quintessence gems, and neat stacks of bronze rank spirit coins. The rest of the team lounged about on the porch of the cloud house in hanging chairs. Jason turned to look at Sophie, who had been staring at him all day. "What?" he asked. "What?" she asked. "You've been looking at me like that all day."
"Like what?"
Sophie asked. "Impassively, I guess," Jason said. "You do everything impassively, so it's hard to differentiate."
"Your face," she said.
"What about my face?"
"Bronze rank," she said. "It made it less awful."
"Yep,"
Belinda agreed. "I miss the chin," Neil said. "It kind of looked like some weird essence power." "It wasn't that bad," Jason said. "Humphrey, tell them it wasn't that bad."
"It wasn't that bad," Humphrey said. "I'd even say it was good."
"Thank you," Jason said.
"I mean," Humphrey continued, "if I ever ran out of mana and couldn't conjure a sword, it was right there. What do I use for a backup now?"
Jason looked put upon as the team laughed.
"It really does look good," Belinda said, taking pity on him. "Bronze rank's been good to you. The square jaw thing you have happening now, that is actually not bad. Right, Soph?"
"It's not terrible."
"That's Sophie language for sexy as all get out, which I think is a little excessive, but each to their own,"
Belinda said. It earned her a glare from Sophie, while Jason shook his head and went back to his ritual. It would have been faster for Clive to perform the ritual, as he had with Neil's growth items, but he hadn't offered and Jason hadn't asked. They both understood that if you could advance your growth items yourself, you did it yourself. The sword was simple and elegant in its design. Silvery blade, a simple red gold hilt with black binding, and a short black tassel. Jason carefully placed it at the center of the magic circle and performed the ritual. Growth item, Dread Salvation, has advanced from iron rank to bronze rank. Growth item, Dread Salvation, has reached its maximum potential. It must be reforged by the original craftsperson in order to advance further. Item, Dread Salvation, has gained new abilities. Clive, Neil, and Humphrey had already ranked up their growth items with no additional effects, and the same had happened for Jason's amulet. His sword was the first of their items to gain new effects. Item, Dread Salvation, Bronze Rank, Growth, Legendary. A sword crafted with gratitude in hope it would be of the greatest use in the moment of greatest need. It was forged with passion and expertise to be a reliable companion, bestowing upon it an incredible potential. Weapon, sword. Effect. If a special attack that applies an affliction is made with this sword, but the subject of the attack has a physical immunity to it, an instance of Stonecutter is applied to the blade, and an instance of Vibrant Echo is inflicted to the enemy. Effect. If a special attack that applies an affliction is made with this sword, but the subject of the attack has a magical immunity to it, an instance of Spellbreaker is applied to the blade, and an instance of Radiant Echo is inflicted to the enemy. Stonecutter, magic, stacking. All attacks deal additional resonating force damage, highly effective against physical defenses. Additional instances have a cumulative effect. Vibrant Echo, damage over time, magic, stacking. Deal ongoing resonating force damage. Additional instances have a cumulative effect. Spellbreaker, magic, stacking. All attacks deal additional disruptive force damage, highly effective against magical defenses and incorporeal entities. Additional instances have a cumulative effect. Radiant Echo, damage over time, magic, stacking. Deal ongoing disruptive force damage. Additional instances have a cumulative effect. In addition to getting more powerful over time, the sword's new abilities allowed it to leave behind ongoing damage effects, bringing it more in line with Jason's own power set. Magic-type afflictions were easier to dispel than most, but almost nothing was immune to them, unlike Jason's various maledictions. To advance the sword further would require Gary's help, but Silver Rank was, for the moment, a distant horizon. Jason was saving his familiar upgrades for last, so he moved on to the Cloud House. He shooed everyone off the porch and returned the house to its flask. The entire house took several minutes to dissolve into smoke and pour into the bottle like a genie.
There must be a big involved ritual for an item like the cloud flask, Neil said.
Nope, Jason said. You just have to get to bronze rank, then feed the greedy bugger about a squillion bucks worth of goodies.
He shook his head at the bottle as he pulled a funnel from his inventory, placed it in the mouth of the flask, and then started shoving in fistfuls of quintessence.
2,200 quintessence, he complained. 200 of it dimension quintessence. Remind me to thank Emir again for supplying the goods for the first rank up. No way I could have afforded this on top of everything else.
Shoveling in all the quintessence gems and then 10,000 spirit coins took longer than the rituals for Jason and Neil's growth weapons put together. Deprived of their comfortable cloud seats, some of the team grew impatient.
Could you have just used silver coins? Neil asked. Or gold? That would have sent it along nicely.
It's not about the value of the coins, Clive said. It's about the magic inside them. All that power doesn't just fuel the upgrade, but balances out all the magic involved in the transformation, so it doesn't go awry.
You know, Neil said to Clive, just once I'd like something to come up and have you say you have no idea.
Hey, Clive, Belinda said.
Yes?
How would Neil kill any monsters if we weren't around?
I have no idea, Clive said.
You two are hilarious, Neil said, flatly.
Actually, that was pretty good, Jason said. Shut up and play with your bottle.
The cult leader, Zato, led Timos and Thadwick across the ruined grounds of the Vayne Estate. The last remnants of the climate-shifting magic were gone, and the desert was rapidly reclaiming the once lush territory. Now it was nothing but withered remnants and piled ruins, only the now dormant magical pylons marking what had once been a stark line between the estate and the desert. They arrived at what had previously been the manor house, now crumbling stone and dried wood. Zato held out his arm, and the limb segmented into pieces, revealing not warm flesh and blood within, but cold iron. The pieces were strung together on a wire, which spooled out as the segments sprung forward, burying themselves in the piled debris. Moments later, chunks of that debris floated into the air, more and more of them, moving into an organized shape. The materials melted, wood and stone flowing like water, as they blended together to form a strange hybrid material. The material flowed into lines, creating a ritual circle on the ground and then a dome that covered it, leaving only a hole large enough to crawl through.
As you grow stronger, Zato said, your meager essence abilities will be supplanted, one by one, by the superior power of the Builder. You will not be bound by mortal limitations, scrabbling for scraps of might from worthless training or miserable monster cores.
This will make me strong? Thadwick asked, nodding at the dome as it neared completion.
Yes, Zato said. So many have passed you over, Thadwick, but I see your true potential. You will prove of supreme value to the Builder once you are stronger. Enter and feel the power flow through you.
After a last wary look, Thadwick got down and crawled through the hole. When the hole closed behind him and he was plunged into darkness, he panicked for a moment. Then he felt the promised power surging into him. It had only been a matter of moments, but he could feel the strength flowing through him, and he started laughing like a madman. Outside the dome, Zato and Timos could no more hear Thadwick than he could hear them as they walked away.
When you said you would find something for Thadwick, I was not optimistic, Timos said. I didn't realize that something like this was possible.
More than possible, it is necessary, Zato said. I was not fully inducted into the leadership, who took their plans with them to the grave while fighting on the island. We have need of guidance, Thadwick and the other one.
Dougal, Timos reminded.
Right. Yes, Thadwick and Dougal are not true believers. They came to us out of desperate, mercenary sensibilities. Half loyalties will be met with half membership. They will pay the rest of their way with sacrifice and will be venerated for their service.
Why bother with the ruse?
Timos asked. Why not just force Thadwick along?
Because even with the soul seed inside it, altering a soul is difficult business, unless that soul is willing. Why force the poison down his throat when a spoonful of honey will have him gulping it down?
Honestly?
I want to make him choke on the spoon,
Zato chuckled.
How close to ready is Dougal?
Timos asked.
He will reach the requisite state shortly before the Church of Purity's people arrive,
Zato said.
The timing is fortuitous. For the moment, make sure that neither Dougal nor Thadwick realize that they are receiving the same treatment.
Not a problem, Timos said.
Dougal is so keen on ingratiating himself that he will do exactly as asked. Thadwick is so self-obsessed that he is oblivious to any of the goings-on.
Zato smiled.
See? Anyone can be useful if you find the task that best suits their abilities.
Utsbug, Neil said.
It wouldn't let me use the blending in version, Jason said.
I don't think there's a version of this that you can discreetly move through a jungle, Humphrey said.
Item, cloud flask, bronze rank, growth, legendary. This item is bound to you and cannot be used by anyone else. Use the energies within the cloud flask to create buildings and vehicles made of clouds. Available forms are restricted by rank. Items contained within the cloud construct when it is returned to the flask are stored in a dimensional space and cannot be recovered until another cloud construct is formed. Available forms: Iron Rank, Cloud House, Grand, Cloud House, Adaptive. Available forms: Bronze Rank, Carriage House, Grand. Unavailable forms: Bronze Rank, Carriage House, Adaptive.
A carriage house is meant to be a building that holds carriages, Jason said. Not a building that trundles about like one. To Jason, the Cloud Flask's bronze rank form looked as much as anything like a massive recreational vehicle, one of the stupidly expensive ones with two levels and a roof deck that movie stars lived in on set. It even had a spot for a driver at the front, although it was directed by placing hands on a misty orb rather than a steering wheel. Other than that, Jason could direct its movements mentally. The cloudy white vehicle with its sunset embellishments stood out brightly amongst the dark stone and deep greenery of the overgrown jungle. There were no wheels, making it something of a hovercraft RV. The boulevards of the overgrown streets were wide but thick with jungle, making them impassable for the huge vehicle. Jason had moved it back and forth a little, but there really wasn't room to drive around. The interior was likewise akin to a luxurious RV, with beds, couches, and comfortable chairs. There actually was a roof deck. From the inside, translucent mist made for clear windows, although they could not be seen through from the outside.
Well, Humphrey consoled, it'll be nice once we're back out of the astral space. It'll be great for taking a long trip, so you, me, and Clive can visit locations to portal to later. That's what my mother did all through Bronze Rank, traveling the world, having adventures.
Actually, that sounds kind of awesome. Neil doesn't get an opening credit until season two, though, and it'll be an also starring with his face hidden by a melon or something.
What?
We can figure it out later, Jason said. I guess I should turn it back into a house and then finish up. What do you say, fellas? Saving the best for last?
Gordon appeared with a flash of Jason's aura as Shade appeared from his shadow.
Gordon says that I should be last, Shade said.
Gordon's orange orb flashed brightly, which was his signal for no.
See? Shade asked. He really doesn't want to go last.
The orange orb started angrily strobing.
He's quite vociferous on the topic, Shade continued.
Shade, stop teasing Gordon, Jason said.
Gordon, it's just an expression. Being last doesn't actually mean you're the best. A small patch of blood seeped from Jason's neck, turning into a leech that crawled along his shoulder. Jason turned to look at it.
Colin, you've already ranked up. You can't do it again.
The disconsolate leech slinked back into Jason's neck. Chapter 47. A Series of Familiar Powers.
Shade was not visibly changed in his new bronze rank vessel. He remained a shadowy figure in a cloak of darkness. The only visible difference was an increase in his number of bodies, from 3 to 7. He also gained the ability to exert a small amount of physical force while remaining an incorporeal entity. It wasn't enough to inflict damage, but it would allow him to perform tasks in places too dangerous for people who weren't intangible and didn't have 6 extra bodies. All of this also meant that it was unlikely that Shade's vessel would be completely eliminated in battle. Barring an unusual fight, such as the one against the Elemental Tyrant that claimed his original Iron Rank vessel, he would remain intact. Any bodies that were destroyed could be remade, so long as at least one remained. The only cost would be time and almost all of Jason's mana. It would not be something done in the midst of combat. The other new ability Shade had acquired was his own dimensional storage space. It wasn't as capacious as that of Jason, Humphrey, or Clive, but was accessible from any of Shade's bodies. Jason's own storage space, his inventory power, had likewise improved as he reached bronze rank. One of its nuances was the ability to expand the number of slots available through the use of dimensional bags. There were 5 slots in the corner of the inventory screen interface for placing dimensional bags, but only one had been available and could only be filled with an iron rank bag. Jason had filled that slot early in his adventuring career, but he brought 2 bronze rank bags with him for use once he ranked up. He had to carry them empty, as dimensional bags could only be placed into other dimensional spaces when they themselves contained nothing. Another boost to his inventory was an increase to the maximum volume per item. He could feel the change instinctively, but would need to experiment to find the exact new limit. Humphrey and Clive had likewise experienced improvements from their storage abilities reaching bronze. Unlike Jason's power, theirs were essence abilities that gained not just incremental improvements, but whole new effects on ranking up. Humphrey's storage space power, Magic Armory, now significantly reduced the mana cost of conjuring his weapons and armor. Now he no longer had to burn a notable chunk of mana at the start of every fight, or whenever he switched between his 2 conjured swords. Clive's Runegate power had gone through the most impressive change. The original function opened a rune circle portal to his storage space, but was now a full-fledged portal power. Combining dimensional storage and a travel portal in one ability wasn't useful in a fight, but it was easily the most concentrated utility power on the team. The increase in utility was another indication of the somewhat unusual makeup of the team. Humphrey and Neil were the only members that would slot easily into conventional team roles, but Jason, Clive, Belinda, and Sophie all operated outside the norm to various degrees. On the relatively normal end of the spectrum were Jason and Sophie. Affliction specialists and dodge tanks were less common variations of the common damage dealer and guardian roles. Clive was a spell-based damage dealer who only had 1 attack spell. Belinda was the most extreme, simultaneously filling no set roles and most of them. A traditional adventuring team used reliable strengths and fixed roles to approach every situation in a similar way, in order to maximize their strengths and minimize their weaknesses. The weakness of Jason's team was the inability to do that. They needed to strategize and adapt to any given circumstance. The team, in a way, had become something of a reflection of Jason. There were better power sets for everyday monster hunting, but this team thrived in meeting challenges that more conventional teams would struggle against. By not being pinned down to one approach, they would be ready when unusual circumstances were thrown their way. Part of the team's adaptive nature was the inclusion of a lot of utility. Most teams would include at least 1 storage space power and would count any more as a happy bonus. As for portal or teleportation powers, there was no team that wouldn't jump at the chance. Many teams would take on an otherwise unremarkable, or even downright incompetent, member for the simple reason that their repertoire included a portal ability. Jason's team commanded 4 storage powers and 3 long-distance travel powers, making them rather enviable. Stash had also evolved to bronze rank alongside Humphrey. The bonded familiar didn't require a new body to be summoned in the way Jason's familiars did. While as mischievous as ever, he was more confident about revealing his true form, which only Humphrey had seen before. His true shape was small, a long serpentine body covered in rainbow scales that ran along him in waves of colour that shimmered and changed. Belinda became completely enchanted with his draconic true form, and Stash became enchanted with the praise she heaped upon him. Gordon went through a slight change when his new body was summoned, with a second pair of glowing blue and orange eyeball orbs joining the first in floating around his body. This gave him 4 simultaneous attack beams, 2 of resonating force, effective against tough opponents, and 2 of disruptive force, effective against magic and incorporeal beings like Gordon himself. Additionally, he could send 2 orbs of the same type hurtling off, even flying them around corners before coming together and detonating. The resultant explosion was powerful, but the orbs would take a minute to reform, during which they could not be used to make further attacks. Making good on his threat, Humphrey pushed the team to stay on the move, hunting down more of the flesh abominations and whatever ordinary monsters they encountered along the way. Eager to push the limits of their new capabilities, both Humphrey and Jason took on flesh abominations alone for the first time. In Jason's case, his bronze rank powers were enough to overwhelm the monster's recovery powers much faster. He had already been able to bypass the rank-based damage resistance, but now his powers were doing bronze rank damage. That was only part of the change, as his new afflictions also played a role. Rigor mortis, inflicted by his Shadow Arm Reaper power, gave a stacking penalty to the speed and recovery attributes of whatever poor soul he inflicted it upon. His inexorable doom power caused the effect to stack up and up, the penalty to speed making the creature more and more sluggish, even when it took swift forms to try and pin down the elusive Jason. Meanwhile, the penalty to recovery left its ability to hold off the afflictions increasingly diminished, even as the afflictions themselves became worse and worse. Another key affliction came from Jason's special attack, Leech Bite. Along with inflicting the bleeding effect, it now also inflicted the same leech toxin poison that Colin did. An instance of the stacking toxin would refresh the bleeding effect whenever it was healed through, leaving the adaptive powers of the flesh abominations unable to stave off Jason's malign powers as effectively as they had in the past. Humphrey was likewise able to overcome the ability of the abominations to adapt to him, in his case with raw power. He showed off the advantage of being a human special attack specialist with an array of offensive techniques that could take on any kind of enemy. If it took a solid form, the resonating force of his shield breaker attack would crack it like an egg. A more amorphous form would absorb heavy physical blows but be vulnerable to the disruptive force of his spirit reaper attack. His unstoppable force power had a longer cooldown, but would devastate the abominations in whatever form they took. Humphrey had not taken on any of them himself before Jason and Neil ranked up, as getting them over the line to bronze rank had always been the priority. Now that they had, he was happier to let himself loose. Like Jason, he had already been ignoring the rank disparity, but increasing the power of his attacks from iron to bronze rank had turned him from a threat to a nemesis. He relentlessly pounded away at an abomination that simply couldn't find a form to withstand the oppressive might. The team were put through their paces as they made a beeline for the center of the city and the territory of the Blood Weaver. Of a night, they continued to rest in the Cloud House, which was now more secure than ever. The magic of the house was more sophisticated at bronze rank, with stronger defenses and a superior ability to hide itself from the senses of wandering monsters. When they stopped each night, Clive had been taking more precise measurements of the ambient magic, which had been rising at a precipitous rate. He updated the team as they rested for the evening. "Isn't that a barely measurable increase?" Jason asked, after Clive gave them the results of his latest analysis.
"The fact that the increase is measurable at all is alarming," Clive told him. "That it's occurred over just a matter of weeks is insane. We need to figure out what these cultists have done."
"And if we can't question them because they're mindless blood thralls?" Sophie asked.
"I doubt they'll be mindless," Clive said. "A blood weaver could turn them into witless blood puppets, but more likely it has employed a traditional form of vampirism, where they are subject to the will of the one that turned them while retaining their own minds."
"We take them alive if we can," Humphrey said.
Not at the risk of endangering the team, though. If we have to put them down, we do it.
If they aren't any help, that's not the end of the road, Clive said. Whatever is causing this change isn't something you can just knock out a magic ritual for and off you go. What's happening is more involved than that.
Any closer to an idea of what that is? Humphrey asked.
I've been going through the books Knowledge gave Jason, looking for something that would produce these results. Without more information, though, I'm not even sure what to look for. At this point, more than talking to these cultists, I need to see what tools they brought with them.
Shade now had enough bodies that he could transform into a mount for each member of the team, and Bronze Rank had enhanced the nature of these mounts he could transform into. For one thing, he could collect multiple bodies together to replicate the self-propelled magical carriages favoured by the Greenstone elite. That was of little use on streets overgrown with jungle, but it was not the only new trick he had picked up. Rather than a full vehicle, Shade could also merge fewer bodies to create different individual mounts. By merging his bodies in pairs, he became three creatures that were somewhat between a narrow-bodied beetle and a praying mantis. Each had a glossy black carapace, glowing eyes, and huge blade arms with glowing white edges from which mist softly drifted. They were an intimidating sight.
Very nice, Jason said, approvingly. Shade, you're an absolute champion.
These creatures do not appear in this world,
Shade said, with his remaining body.
They exist in another world I spent time in while serving as a familiar.
Hold on, Humphrey said. Jason, you have no problem with these terrifying blade-armed monstrosities, but Heidels are disturbing.
They have two heads, Humphrey, two heads. Can you imagine having two heads? Imagine if you had a great idea for a recipe, then had to explain it to your other head. That's not right.
Wait, that's your problem? Humphrey asked.
What if you're eating something delicious? Either one head gets left out, or each one only gets half as much because they have to share a stomach. Half as much? What if it's a delicious cake?
That was a nice cake you brought out for the rank-up feast, Neil said. Did you make that yourself?
I did. The secret is to sweeten the cream before whipping it and really make it the highlight.
Was there leftover cake? Sophie asked, with a surprisingly bushy moustache.
There was not, Jason said.
Boo, she jeered, before turning into an iridescent blue jungle lizard. At least he's figured out how to shapeshift clothes now.
Actual, Sophie said.
They're still part of his body, so technically he was naked, Jason said.
Humphrey said nothing, pinching the bridge of his nose and shaking his head. Not all of the team rode the mantis beetles. Sophie maintained her scouting glide flight over their heads, while Humphrey rode Stash in lizard form. Clive joined Sophie, drifting slowly through the air on Onslow, the flying tortoise. His familiar wasn't very fast at any altitude beyond just above ground height, but as he didn't need to navigate the terrain, there was no problem keeping up. That left the three mantis beetles, the most Shade could produce. It was enough for Jason, Neil, and Belinda, giving the whole team effective transport. The blade arms of the mounts were ideal for cutting a path through the jungle, while the remaining six beetle legs offered a solid platform that could navigate the uneven ground with ease.
Shade, how do you think this form would hold up in combat? Jason asked.
Although the mantis beetle looked to have a hard, chitinous exterior, it was actually composed of the same soft, comfortable shadow stuff Shade's horse form had been. The blade arms were effectively cutting through the undergrowth, however.
That would be unreliable at best, Shade said. I strongly suspect that any amount of damage would make me unable to sustain this form. You do not have to tell anyone that, however. I could be used to make an effective bluff.
I like the way you think.
Oh, great, Neil said. As if Asano wasn't dodgy enough already, now he's got a partner. The team reached the interior of the city, where the buildings were completely shattered and the jungle in complete ascendance. As with their first visit, they were unharassed by monsters as they pushed in. Rather than ride mounts, the team made a slogging path on foot through the thick undergrowth. "Do you think the Bloodweaver took control of all the monsters in this area?" Neil asked.
"There might have been some too strong to take over," Humphrey said. "Other silver rank monsters. They were more likely driven out of the Weaver's territory rather than subjugated. You can expect to encounter vampire versions of everything bronze and below that was here, though."
"It kind of worries me that we still aren't seeing any," Neil said.
"It almost certainly knows we're here by now," Clive said. "It's smart enough to try and bait us in, the way it did last time, but not smart enough to realize we'd see through it."
"Yeah, but we're walking into the trap anyway," Neil said.
"Once the fighting starts, it probably won't stop until we reach the Bloodweaver," Humphrey said.
"We're going to be fighting all the monsters from a large area, all in one wave. Let Jason and Sophie do the heavy lifting as much as possible, since they're our endurance players. Obviously do what you have to, but conserve your mana and stamina as much as you can. We have a lot of mana recovery, but expect a lot of fight."
Humphrey stopped, looking around at the team.
"Make no mistake," he said.
"This will be a battle, not a fight. We are about to experience the single most grueling combat scenario that any of us have ever encountered. More than the expedition into the desert astral space, more than Jason playing distraction to the silver rank elemental. We're going to war against an army of vampire monsters, and we'll be wading through the bodies of the dead before we're done."
"So what I'm hearing is that it will be easy and we shouldn't worry," Neil said.
Humphrey glared at him, and Jason put a reassuring hand on Humphrey's arm.
"Mate, it's all right," Jason said. "We know the stakes. We know what we're up against, and we know what we'll have to face before we're done. Don't go wasting your energy now on being tense. You'll have intensity enough once the fighting starts. For now, just trust in your team."
Jason glanced at the jungle around them, as if waiting for something.
"Damn," he said.
"What?" Humphrey asked.
"That would have been an epic moment for the monsters to appear," Jason said.
"You'd think vampires would have a more appropriate sense of drama."
Chapter 48. It's not about killing monsters.
They heard the monsters before they saw them. It began with the sound of something moving loudly through the thick jungle, pushing its way roughly through the undergrowth. Humphrey had the team turn around and go back the way they came, making for one of the defensible points he had been looking out for as they travelled. He had picked out a construction that had held up better than most, due to being a solid, flat stone platform. It was only around chest high, far from enough to stop monsters, but was at least an impediment they could work with. It was also sized fairly well for the team, giving Sophie and Humphrey the chance to move about while still staying close to the more vulnerable party members. Shade returned to his normal form, gently depositing his riders on the ground. The others took a moment to begin calling up their summons and familiars while Stash turned from a riding lizard into a giant marsh hydra. At bronze rank, he could take the physical form of bronze rank monsters, but could only use the full magical powers of iron rank monsters. He could use some minor magical abilities of bronze rank monsters, but certainly nothing as powerful as the Hydra's potent rapid healing. What he did get was the Hydra's strength, toughness, and multiple teeth-laden heads. Jason directed Gordon to stay with the main group, as the familiar's direct damage would be more useful to the team than it would be for Jason in the fight to come. He was about to disappear into the shadows when Humphrey held him up.
"Jason," Humphrey said, "we're going to lean on you heavily for this, but I know you can do it."
Jason chuckled.
"Humphrey," he said, shaking his head,
"you still don't really understand adventuring. It's not about killing monsters."
Jason tugged casually at his new bronze rank battle robe.
"It's about how you look while you're killing monsters."
"And you have to admit," Jason's shadow cloak manifested around him.
"I make this look good."
"Dear gods, you're insufferable," Neil called out from where he was setting up a summoning circle. "Also, good luck, and please don't die." Jason slipped the hood of his magical cloak back, giving Humphrey a rare smile completely devoid of smirk.
Don't go getting it into your head that you have to do all the work, Jason warned him. Don't go thinking that you're the one who has to save everyone to make the big sacrifice. Remember when I got it into my head to go off and kill all those bandits alone? I was wrong to do that. Be the beneficiary of my mistakes. It's not just about you, or me, which I need to be reminded of from time to time. Happy to help, Neil called out, still pouring the salt for his summoning circle. Thank you, Neil, Jason said flatly, then turned his attention back to Humphrey. Trust the team, Humphrey. Rely on the team. We're pretty good. Well, Neil's okay, but the rest of us... Jason slipped his hood back up and lightly ran off, vanishing into the jungle. He was stronger when he was free to run rampant, but would remain in contact with the team through the voice chat. There were ropey vines all over the platform, and Clive handed Sophie and Belinda vials they used to rapidly wither the plants and give themselves clear footing. It was a concoction of Jory's that Clive had acquired before returning to the jungle-covered city. They didn't have enough for it to waste on pathfinding through jungle scrub, but to give them some much-needed solid footing in a crucial moment, it was perfect. As the two women cleared off the plants, Clive drew out ritual circles. He started with a large one in the centre of the platform, his battle platform ritual that would enhance the wand and staff attacks, as well as any damage spells of the group. Then he moved on to circles attached to the end of his weapons. The glowing lines moved with the weapons as he waved them about. The advantage of staff and wand weapons was that they were highly mana efficient compared to combat magic. The disadvantage was that they were also weaker, but Clive's ritual circles would help remedy that. The circles he used would refine the ambient magic of the area and feed it into the weapons, providing additional power without requiring additional mana from Clive's own pool. The impact this would have on the ambient magic once he started using his weapons meant that any further rituals in the area would be tricky to use for a while, but that was hardly a concern compared to what was about to happen. Clive decided to get in before then and try something he had been working on. It wasn't related to his essence abilities. Instead, it was pure ritual magic. Ritual magic designed for combat was exceptionally rare, and it was something Clive had developed himself. He drew ritual circles in the air, one after another in a line, like a tube. He poured a large amount of his own mana into each one, mostly depleting his mana pool by the time he was done. It ran from the centre of the battle platform circle directly towards the jungle where the sound of rushing monsters grew louder by the moment. Humphrey and Neil, in the meantime, were calling up their summons. Neil's chrysalis golem looked different at bronze rank. It was just as tall, but the formerly chunky, ogreish form was now more refined, like a powerfully muscled giant. For his own summon, Humphrey hesitated before throwing the summoner's die. He ultimately decided to use it, knowing that it could provide a crucial advantage in what would be a punishing battle. Hopefully even a bad roll would be mitigated by the new ability it had gained on reaching bronze rank. At first, Humphrey had thought there was no change to the function of the die, as there was little change to the description. Item: Summoner's Die. Form: Bronze Rank. Growth: Legendary. An eldritch tool for altering the nature of summoned creatures. Tool: Die. Requirements: Summoning power. Effect: Rolling this die while enacting a bronze rank or lower summoning power will randomly alter the form the summon takes. Can be used in conjunction with Summoner's Die, Element, and Summoner's Die, Power. Using more than one die of the same kind will negate the effects of all dice. What he had only later realized was that three of the faces on the die had changed. It had only been the day before when he used the die and one of the new faces rolled up. After stopping, the symbol that had lit up was not that of an animal, but one that Clive quickly translated as meaning power. The die had then rolled again on its own, landing on the symbol for wolf. The result had been Humphrey's summons becoming werewolf-like creatures, larger, more powerful, and standing on two legs. They were still made of dragon bone and had the conjured equipment generated by Humphrey's storage power, in this case bronze rank armor, perfectly tailored to fit their unusual body shape. Humphrey hoped for a similar result as he rolled again. When it stopped, a glowing symbol rose up from the die, another of the new symbols,
Humphrey had gone over them with Clive after finding out about the new sides. This one meant double. He had been hoping that meant it doubled the number of summons it called up. Even unenhanced by the die, 10 of his bone soldiers would be of critical value against the numbers they were expecting. After falling to a stop, the die rolled itself again. The symbol for bird rose to float next to the one for double. Then the die rolled for a third time, stopping on cat. The three symbols merged to form a new symbol, one that Humphrey didn't know. Then his summons began to appear. There were 5, the normal number for his summoning power at bronze rank. They had the hind legs and body of oversized lions, and the wings and head of a giant eagle. Their front legs were also those of an eagle, ending in powerful talons.
"Griffins," Humphrey said in a half-whisper.
He had seen them as a child, while travelling with his mother. Sailing on a ship near the coast, they had spotted the griffins soaring majestically off the top of a cliff. They had swooped down, snatching sharks right out of the water before winging away with them. It had been young Humphrey's first encounter with a magical beast that was natural rather than a monster. Such creatures were rare in the low magic greenstone region where he was born and raised. The experience had left griffins with a special place in his heart, and he was entranced as his summons took their form. They were all white, the colour of dragon bone, and wearing armoured barding suited to their forms.
"Humphrey," Sophie called out. "Eyes up."
Humphrey stirred from his unexpected, nostalgic reverie and realized that the sounds of the approaching monsters had grown from a few individuals crashing through the jungle into what sounded like a wave. Like water crashing onto a rocky shore, the violent sounds of monsters tearing through the undergrowth came washing over them. Humphrey touched one of the griffins. "Swoop, grab, and drop," he instructed them. They took to the air. He then leapt lightly onto the platform, where Neil and his golem had already clambered up. Most of the team were gathered with their familiars and summons, the exception being Humphrey and Jason. Jason had taken Colin and Shade with him, leaving Gordon behind. Humphrey was present, but his griffins were winging overhead as Clive's floating tortoise watched their majestic swooping forlornly. Humphrey had sent Stash in his domineering Hydra form back behind the platform. The monsters would largely try and swarm them from the front, which is where their main defensive strength was positioned. It was inevitable, though, that the platform would become surrounded. Stash would be their main line of defense from that approach. Clive and Neil both started casting spells on their teammates. Humphrey grew half his height again from Neil's first offering. Ability: Giant's Might. Growth: Spell: Boon. Cost: High Mana. Cooldown: 10 minutes. Current rank: Bronze, 0.04%. Effect: Iron. Target ally and their equipment grow larger, gaining an enhanced power attribute. Effect: Bronze. Ally also gains resistance to physical damage and high momentum effects. Clive's first spell affected the whole team on the platform, including their summons and familiars. Jason, Shade, Colin, and the griffins who were out of range were not so blessed. The ability created rings of glowing runes that floated around everyone. Ability: Rune Mantle. Rune. Spell: Boon. This ability has variable subtypes, contingent on effect. Cost: low mana. Cooldown: 10 seconds. Current rank: Bronze, 0.02%. Effect: Iron. Bestow a ring of random runes around an ally. Each rune is associated with a specific effect that affects the ally or an enemy. Attacks against the ally trigger the destruction of a random rune, causing its effect to occur. Effect: Bronze. Increasing the cost to moderate mana allows the rune mantle to be bestowed on all nearby allies. Clive's second spell likewise affected the whole team, making them glow gold-red for a moment before fading. Ability: Mantle of Retribution. Karmic. Spell: Boon. Retributive. Cost: low mana. Cooldown: 10 seconds. Current rank: Bronze, 0.01%. Effect: Iron. Inflicts retributive impact damage on anyone who attacks the target ally. Effect: Bronze. Increasing the cost to moderate mana allows the Mantle of Retribution to be bestowed on all nearby allies.
While the spells were being cast, the monster's approach grew louder and louder, yet there were no roars or shrieks. They were silent, save for the commotion of their passage through the jungle as they flattened everything in their path. Finally, the monsters appeared in front of the team, erupting out of the jungle. As unnerving as the fact that they weren't issuing any noises was the way the disparate group moved as one. Normally, such a wild collection of monsters would be more eager to fight each other than they would adventurers. As the creatures reached the platform, they finally started to make noise, all in harmony. It was an alien, sonorous cry, filled with hunger.
"Throw your heaviest attacks to blunt the first wave, then conserve mana," Humphrey called out, as if the team hadn't gone over and over the plans for the battle prior to this moment. Clive had already made his big mana expenditure on his row of ritual circles. They were lined up like the barrel of a gun, and he fired a bolt from his staff through the first. The bolt froze, as if caught in an invisible hand, and the mana Clive had put into the circle was fed into the bolt until the circle collapsed. The bolt shot forward again, stopping and draining mana from each circle until it was a huge globe of force that made the air around the team vibrate. While the bolt was going through its stop-start passage, the rest of the team opened up. Belinda used her force tether power to gather a large cluster of the shoulder-to-shoulder monsters and then open her Reaper Pit power underneath. The tether exploded, and the rest of their health would be eaten away by the pit. Only a few of the tough bronze rankers would eventually escape when the pit's duration came to an end. Clive's bolt finished its passage, having consumed all the ritual circles. It landed amongst the monsters like a military ordnance, throwing up a huge cloud of dirt and dust, along with a low boom that rammed into their eardrums. The cloud obscured most of the monsters from their sight, while gobbets of wet jungle earth and wet former monster rained down on the team. They didn't have time to pay it any mind. What they could see of the monsters showed that they hadn't slowed down.
"What the hell was that?" Jason asked through voice chat.
"Sorry," Clive said. "I didn't realize the effect would be that big."
"Just watch where you're aiming that thing."
Chapter 49 Sin Eater. Sophie and Humphrey were waiting for the monsters to get closer, while Neil cast a spell, conjuring two sets of three stone reels above his head. There were pictures of the various monsters present on the reels, like a giant, archaic slot machine. There were also images of the team, although massively outnumbered by those of the monsters.
Ability, reels of fortune, prosperity. Spell, this ability has variable subtypes. Contingent on effect. Cost, high mana. Cooldown, 10 minutes. Current rank, bronze, 0.00%. Effect, iron. Conjures three immaterial reels. Channel mana into the reels to generate random effects on random individuals within the area. If an individual is affected more than once by the same use of the reels, the effect is increased for each reel. Effect, bronze. Conjures a second set of reels. Each reel is more likely to match sets for additional effect when large numbers of a creature type are present.
The reels wheeled around before slowing and locking into place, one after another. Due to the bronze rank effect and preponderance of monsters, it was all but a given that each reel would produce a matching set. The first turned up three matching images of a snake monster and sent a strike of electricity into the cloud. The team could only see flashes of the lightning through the dirt and dust of the cloud that Clive had thrown up. The second reel showed a three set of a gorilla-like monster and sent a huge ball of fire sailing into the air. At the peak of its arc, it broke into numerous smaller fireballs, plunging into the cloud as the reels above Neil faded. By this point, the monsters were almost upon them. Humphrey turned his gaze to the sky and teleported high above them, before initiating his dive bomb and unstoppable force attacks, descending through the air like the Sword of Judgment. He carved a heavily armored beetle-type creature clean in half and sent out a shockwave that scattered the surrounding monsters, dispersing the momentum they rebuilt after Clive's attack. Humphrey's wings appeared on his back, and with a heavy flap, they pushed him back onto the platform. The first monsters had reached the platform, and Sophie used her massive acceleration power, Eternal Moment.
Time seemed to freeze, as she rapidly produced wind blades that shot off as the power faded, so many that even the iron rank attack eliminated a bronze rank monster. With everyone having fired off their big openers, Neil cast a spell. Ability, cornucopia, prosperity, spell, boon, recovery, cost, low mana, cooldown, 1 hour, current rank, bronze, 0.01%, effect, iron, bestow a very strong mana and stamina recovery effect on all nearby allies with a moderate duration. Effect, bronze, provide boons that adapt to the needs of each ally. These effects have a long duration. The team's mana rapidly replenished, and the team received various bonuses. Clive received an increase to wand and staff damage, as did Belinda, who had used her spurious sorcerer power to also gain the power to use magic weapons. Humphrey received a cost reduction for special attacks, while Sophie had her passive damage abilities strengthened. As for Neil, he had his cooldown times reduced. Even the familiars received bonuses. Only Jason missed out by being out of range. Everything was turning to chaos as monsters piled up around the platform. After Clive's blast gutted the center mass of the monster wave, it was the flanks that pushed in hardest. Humphrey and Sophie each held a side, while Neil's golem took the less hectic front. It was higher rank than Sophie, but the tenacious adventurer was still better able to hold the line than the summon. The monsters were primarily a mix of high-end iron and low-end bronze, with a few powerful standouts among them. The horde spread to the rear of the platform faster than expected after being pushed around the sides. There they ran into Hydroform Stash, and Humphrey directed the griffins to move in and support him. The monsters piled up around the platform, held off by Stash, Sophie, Humphrey, and the golem. Humphrey was swinging his sword back and forth in workmanlike fashion, his normal blows enough to put paid to the iron rankers. His special attacks he saved for the bronzes. Sophie was moving so fast, she looked like a flipbook animation, like a series of still images leading one into the other. She made the most of her increased damage buff and battered her foes with a dazzling series of hits that looked more like the speed of a bronze ranker. Her wind blade power was of limited effect against the strength and number of the enemy. Instead, she relied on her wind wave power that could blast powerful gusts of air and send enemies flying. Usable every 6 seconds, it was an effective tool for disrupting the enemy and buying time. With the team's mana regeneration and her own efficiency, it was a pattern she could keep up indefinitely. The others poured out damage from behind, Belinda and Clive with staves, Gordon and Belinda's lantern familiar with beams and bolts of force. Onslow floated above them, blasting out powers from his shell. The magically saturated astral space was kind to the rune tortoise, allowing its powers to recharge more swiftly than normal and making it less reliant on Clive's mana. The ranged attackers mostly focused on Sophie's side and the golem at the front. Humphrey brought strength and resilience enough to hold a side largely on his own. An unstable detente was formed, the monsters blindly attacking but unable to make it past the team's defences for the moment. The initially impassive monsters were increasingly entering a state of blood frenzy, their vampiric natures revealed in a clamouring thirst for the blood of the team. The powers Clive had placed on the team, the rings of runes and the retributive damage, were proving a highly efficient use of his mana. Their effects weren't great, but they were ongoing and cheaply reapplied. The mantle of retribution inflicted damage back onto enemies, not in huge amounts, but it accumulated as the monsters threw themselves at Humphrey, the golem, and Stash, all of whom were taking regular hits. Each attack also triggered one of the runes from the rune mantle, to wildly varied effect. Some gave the ally a heal over time, an instant burst of mana recovery, or a boon like damage reduction, enhanced strength, or even more retributive damage. When the runes affected the attacking enemy, they usually blasted out damage that could be of any type. Elemental damage was the most common, but also varieties of force, from the powerful resonating and disruptive types to sonic shockwaves. At other times, the runes applied afflictions, from a weakening poison to flames that wouldn't seem to go out. One more effect was impinging upon the enemies with every attack they made. It was one that had little immediate effect, but threatened to ultimately determine the fight. Ability,
Hegemony, Sin, Aura, Holy, Unholy. Base cost, none. Cooldown, none. Current rank, bronze, 0.09%. Effect, iron. Allies within the aura have increased resistance to afflictions, while enemies within the aura have their resistance to afflictions reduced. Enemy resistances are further reduced for each instance of sin they are suffering from. Effect, bronze. Inflicts an instance of sin on enemies that make physical or magical attacks against allies within the aura. Instances applied in this way cannot be resisted. Sin, affliction, curse, stacking. All necrotic damage taken is increased. Additional instances have a cumulative effect. Jason's initial plans had been literally blasted into dust by Clive, forcing him to reorient himself. He and Shade's bodies were shadowy figures moving amongst the monsters, elusive and fleeting presences that monsters had no more than a swipe or two at before they were gone. His aura was blanketing the area without giving away his position, akin to hiding a tree in the forest. It was one of the first aura techniques Farah had ever shown him, and now it was second nature. He might not be able to hide his aura from a well-trained silver ranker, but even they would have trouble pinpointing his location when he used this technique. He stayed relatively close to the platform, where his aura could blanket the monsters attacking his team. Every attack earned the monsters an instance of the necrosis-enhancing sin affliction, setting them up for a later fall. Every enemy that struck out against his allies was slowly shoveling earth from their own grave. Jason himself also took damage. Even without his aura revealing his presence, simply weaving through the monsters meant that many were taking swipes at him as he passed. Those were a small price to pay for the havoc he was wreaking in return. For the bronze rankers, he was lashing out with his dagger, piling on afflictions with every sweeping slice. In his other hand was a bronze rank weapon he had stowed away in his inventory since looting it from the Marsh Hydra he had fought with Humphrey and Clive. Item: Flail of the Hydra, bronze rank, rare. A whip imbued with the life force of a Hydra. Weapon: whip. Effect: the whip does not function like a normal whip. When swung, the heads of the whip will seek out enemies to attack. Effect: poison inflicted using the whip as a medium is more potent. The whip had five thick, brown, leathery tails that ended in bulbs, within which were mouths filled with wickedly sharp teeth. They flailed uncontrollably, springing eagerly at any flesh that wasn't attached to the arm directing it. As Jason could use two shadow arms now, he had one for flexibility with the dagger and one to add reach to the whip. The disadvantage of the whip was that it didn't inflict the trio of afflictions the conjured dagger produced, which is why Jason used that for the tougher monsters. It still applied the disease added by his shadow arm power and the effect of any special attack he used. Most importantly, those effects were delivered by each of the five heads. That meant a single target special attack could now affect five at a time, albeit randomly in whatever vague direction the whip was swung. In a thick crowd of monsters, it was an excellent tool for thinning out the weaker ones. The whip's bites might not have dealt a lot of damage, but as an affliction delivery system, it was amazing. Jason was unconcerned about the damage being inflicted on him, in spite of being amidst a sea of monsters. Pain was an old friend to any adventurer that truly threw themselves into the work, and his powers gave him powerful advantages over the vampiric enemy. His blood abilities were especially potent against the vampiric creatures and the blood magic that fueled them. As he lay into them with his dagger, that made his choice of special attack obvious. Ability: Leech Bite, Blood, Special Attack. Melee: wounding, blood, drain, poison. Base cost: low stamina. Cooldown: none. Current rank: bronze, 0.07%. Effect: iron. Inflicts or refreshes the bleeding condition. Drains a small amount of health and stamina when refreshing the bleeding condition. Effect: bronze. Inflicts an instance of leech toxin. Bleeding, affliction, wounding, blood. Deals ongoing damage by causing or increasing blood loss. As a wounding effect, this condition absorbs and negates an amount of incoming healing, after which this affliction immediately ends. Leech toxin, affliction, poison, blood, stacking. When bleeding is negated, an instance of leech toxin on the target is consumed to reapply bleeding. Additional instances can be accumulated.
Against the vampiric monsters, both the bleeding effect and the health drain were operating more powerfully than normal, even accounting for the increased bronze rank. The health drain helped keep him going, although alone it was not enough to outpace the regular swipes and bites that he suffered. Fortunately, he was able to devour the very means the vampires sought to bring him down with. Every bite he suffered only made him stronger, as his sin-eater ability devoured the curses they carried. You have been afflicted with vampiric blood curse. Vampiric blood curse, affliction, poison, blood, stacking, has a slight disorienting effect that increases with stacks. Beyond a certain threshold, dying under this effect will cause you to rise as a vampiric ghoul. You have resisted vampiric blood curse. You have gained an instance of resistant. You have gained an instance of integrity. For Jason, the vampiric powers of their enemies were not an issue. He had some concerns about his team, but they were holding it off to a degree. Sophie and Jason's auras protected them, and Neil was on hand to cleanse if necessary. The plan was to leave that to Jason when necessary, though. He not only didn't spend mana to cleanse, he got it back in return. Jason's Sin-Eater ability already increased his resistances, and increased them even further for each effect he resisted. At bronze rank, each effect resisted also bestowed a new boon, alongside each instance of the resistance boon. Integrity, heal over time, mana over time, stamina over time, holy, stacking. Periodically recover a small amount of health, stamina, and mana. Additional instances have a cumulative effect. The effect of a single instance was very mild, but with every bite he suffered, the healing continued to stack up. On top of this, he also had his protective amulet. Item, Amulet of the Dark Guardian. Growth, bronze rank, legendary. Effect, for each instance of an affliction applied to an enemy, gain an instance of Guardian's Blessing. You may bestow all instances of Guardian's Blessing upon another person by touch. Guardian's Blessing, boon, holy. Instances are consumed to absorb damage from any source. Additional instances have a cumulative effect. For each instance consumed, gain an instance of Blessing's Bounty. Blessing's Bounty. Heal over time. Holy. Stacking. Heal over time. Additional instances have a cumulative effect. As he laid out afflictions, he gained stacks of protection that were consumed as fast as they were laid on, leaving a heal effect in their wake. Between the two healing effects and the drain, Jason was healing much of the damage that monsters landed on him with their opportunistic strikes. He constantly flickered around using Shade's bodies to stay on the move. He never stopped long enough in any particular location for the monsters around him to stop and make concerted attacks. That kind of focus, when surrounded, would easily be enough to overwhelm him in short order. Even staying on the move, and even with all his protections, he was taking damage faster than he was healing it. That, and the slowly accruing vampiric curse affecting the team, made it time for a return to the platform. He sent one of Shade's bodies ahead, allowing him to step through another and right into the middle of his team. Chapter 50. The Most Dangerous Thing in the Dark. Behind his front-line team members, Jason's injuries swiftly started healing over. The recovery power he gained from devouring vampiric curses combined with the healing Colin provided to close his wounds without requiring intervention from Neil. In most cases, his armor had mitigated the bulk of the damage, so there were no egregious single injuries. Jason did not immediately turn his attention to the team. First, he looked out at the amassing monsters, picking out the sturdier bronze rank one. His eyes sought out those who were affected by his afflictions, but tough enough that they were still far from being overcome. He cast inexorable doom on them, one after the other, to start churning out the automatic afflictions that would stack his amulet. Ability: Inexorable Doom. Doom. Spell: Curse. Cost: moderate mana.